Oh, it's so nice to sit with you all. And I'm assuming my mute button worked, but I didn't hear my dogs. But for those of you who are new, my dogs have been barking quite a bit this morning. So my apologies for the canine chorus you might hear. So again, welcome. I'm really happy to be back sitting with you all. As I mentioned, I was on retreat. It was an 8-day retreat with Philip Moffitt and Tuareg Sala and Dana De Palma. And as you can imagine, and some of you may have experienced, home retreats are different than retreats on the land at Spirit Rock. And when I had signed up, I thought my daughter would be with her dad, but Jesse was with me, which provided extra opportunities for practice in living with a teenager on retreat. But really a beautiful time to practice. So I'm aware, I feel like part of me is still on retreat. So if I seem weird today, I think that I'll blame that. I think that's why. So today I want to explore together a couple of different threads, and we'll see how well I do at pulling them all together. So bear with me. I do want to mention again, I'm going to step on a political soapbox just for a moment. I think because learning about the shootings in Boulder when I was on retreat, that there was a real deep penetration and taking it in about the culture we have here in the States. And just, I want to share a little personally. In 99, the first school shooting in Columbine, it was actually, that was the final prompt for me to become a therapist. I remember thinking I wanted to go, it was in April of 99. I started my graduate program a few months later, wanting to work with kids, with teenagers, and very much motivated from Columbine. In about 15 years ago, I was held up at gunpoint in front of my house, like a gun to my chest. The kid was probably 19 years old. I lived in Boulder during the Aurora theater shootings. My babysitter had a friend who was there. She was fine. She wasn't harmed during that shooting. And then, as many of you know, because some of you were sitting with me, the shootings at the synagogue in Pittsburgh, which is where I grew up. And I grew up in Squirrel Hill, which is where the synagogue is located, where the shootings took place. It was about a mile and a half or so from the house I grew up in. My friends were bar mitzvahed and bat mitzvahed at that synagogue. I was actually at my father's funeral service in a church about 2 miles away when the shootings happened. And we were all in the service and we heard all the sirens going. This is just my story. And I would imagine in the 40 or 50 or so that are here, we could each have a story in which that these shootings that take place all the time in the States have touched us personally. And this, how do we hold as practitioners these wins, the 10,000 sorrows, and the astonishing, this is me being political, lack of will that we have to change the gun laws here in America, but how do we hold it again as practitioners, that we want to stay equanimous with an open heart when these events that happen are so difficult to understand. And again, the flavor of racial hatred in the shootings for the Asian Americans in Atlanta, that brings up another, it turns up the volume of a different level of hate here in the States. And I know we don't have it's elsewhere in the globe, but here in America, again, as I named before, this disease, and how, again, as we come together and sit to come as Sangha and to understand these teachings as a way of relieving ourselves from the added layers of suffering, and how do we hold with an open heart, again, the sorrow that's happening. And these are just a few incidences. And like I named, people are being killed by gun violence, just in the States and worldwide, all the time. And again, that sort of mind-numbing way of, well, how do we hold this? And how do we hold this in a time of, if just a, okay, as a note, as a screen. If people are listening to the podcast as a and walking, if you wouldn't mind just having the screen stay steady, that would be most appreciated. But how do we, in this time of the pandemic, when so many of us are socially distancing and there's a sense of isolation and loneliness that comes up? And I was listening to a podcast on being, Krista Tippett interviewing a woman, Christine Runyon, who is speaking very much to this point of the toll on our nervous system. I think the talk is called something like the impact on the nervous system of living in social isolation and what it's doing to this animal body. We're herd animals, and to be so separate from one another, and to have been, again, I think I said this before, but how we've sort of become entrained to fear each other, or we sit together with a mask on and hope that if we're sick, we don't get someone we love sick, and what that's doing to us. And Christine Runyon was pointing to, we sort of have been living in this perpetual state of trauma. And we've certainly talked about this here in this group, and Peter Levine's somatic experiencing work, he talks about it, and Bessel van der Kolk and the Body Keeps Score, his work. It's this way the system has not really moved past being in fight or flight or freeze response. And I'm sure many of you know or have friends where we can feel like our fuses are shorter than they used to be. There's less patience, there's less bandwidth, there's this fatigue that has come as a result of being so isolated from one another. And the predictions, which I hope are not correct, but are slightly scary, that we're gonna see this increase in violence because of this isolation and loneliness that can give fuel to anger. And we might notice it more. There's less tolerance, not just in that way of being able to hold our own upset, the anger, the shortness, the frustration, the loneliness that can come. Both, it's, maybe 6 weeks ago, we're talking about that line, the story in the Atlantic magazine about bring back the nervous breakdown, that at the time in the 30s and the 40s, the nervous breakdown was considered sociological. It wasn't psychological. And I feel like in 2021, the sense of isolation and loneliness isn't psychological, it's sociological. It's part of the way our culture is these days. And again, to come back to the practice, how can we lean into these teachings that can say, oh, sweetie, stay here, stay in the body. And the mind can get us going in so many different directions and repeat the stories we have about ourselves or others. And the invitation of this practice to say, drop into the body, feel the earth elements. This is directly out of the Satipatthana Sutta. Feel the earth element, feel the element of wind and water and space and fire as a way of interrupting the thought patterns, as a way of connecting, feeling a sense of connection and belonging, a sense of a part, being a part of the earth that is supporting us in the heavens above us. How can we allow ourselves to feel connected to the earth at a time when we're very disconnected from our fellow humans? Gregory Orr's poem, "This is what was bequeathed to us. This is what was bequeathed to us. This earth, the beloved left," sorry, "and leaving left to us no other world but this one. Willows in the river and the factory with its black smokestacks, no other shore, only this bank on which the living gather, no meaning but what we find here, no purpose but what we make that. And the beloved's clear instructions, turn me into song, sing me awake." How do we lean into that which is beautiful? That, do we know what touches us, whether it's being out in nature in the spring here in California, the flowers are gorgeous. Do we know what's in our toolkit, so to speak, of that which nourishes us? That is our healthy things that nourish us. We know the where we can go sort of for false refuge, whether it's Netflix or chocolate or whatever that realm of things can be. But sort of how aware are we of that which nurtures us, that we can reach into and find a sense of contentment or ease or, perhaps most importantly, joy? How do we lean into and find and cultivate our capacity to touch into joy now, today, in this time when it may seem we're kind of on short supply of that. From Wendell Berry, I'm sure many of you know this, the piece of Wild Things. When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water and I feel above me the day-blind stars. Waiting with their light for a time, I rest in the grace of the world and I am free. The peace of wild things. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. How can we find that within our own fathom-long form to not tax ourselves with forethought of grief and sorrow? It is a practice. It requires a sense of, or invites a sense of resolve and of commitment to what am I orienting my thoughts towards? I know for me, after the Boulder shooting, and I lived in Boulder, I've lived there twice. So again, I'm still kind of reverberating from that. I shopped at that store. And I found myself kind of watching the news, kind of like watching the train wreck, and talking to friends that live there and how to hold both the sorrow and also making space for, okay, how do we balance that out when we want to stay aware of what's happening? Because the tendency can just be like, I'm staying in bed. I don't want to know. Sometimes that might be what's the skillful response. And sometimes there's a way of how do we know, how do we stay engaged and take action from a skillful place? But that needs to be nourished, right? How do we take care of ourselves? From this poem, so my friend Dana was teaching the Nine Bodies Retreat, and she shared this poem really thematically on the retreat, and I want to share it with you. It's beautiful, one of Mary Oliver's poems. It's called Swimming One Day in August. It is now, I said, for the deepening and quieting of the spirit among the flux of happenings. Something has pestered me so much, I thought my heart would break. I mean the mechanical part. I went down in the afternoon to the sea, which held me until I grew easy. About tomorrow, who knows anything, except that it will be time again for the deepening and the quieting of the spirit. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Something had pestered me so much, I thought my heart would break. I went down in the afternoon to the sea, which held me until I grew easy. I'll invite us to think about, to open up to those things that might be pestering us so much that we think our hearts might break, as I've made clear. I think today, certainly for me, it is this gun is this senseless, tragic, infuriating gun violence in our country that pesters me so much. I think my heart might break. And for each one of us, we might have our own version of what it is that pesters us. We might have a list of things that pester us so much. We think our heart might break in this flux of happenings. So just to lightly consider, or to imagine a list some distance away of the things that are pestering us. And if this is a helpful image, again, we have a global sangha here. That is a lot of space in the middle of our circle, and to imagine offering into the circle that which is pestering us, that will be alchemized and transformed. No one will hold it. It's just an offering up to the center of the circle, perhaps, if it's helpful as an image, that there as a bonfire into which we can place. If we were to write on a piece of paper, I would put gun violence and put it in the fire. I would put loneliness. I would put the despair of our youth in the fire to let it burn, to be alchemicalized. What would you put in this fire to be burned, to be purified? What is pestering you such that you feel your heart might break? Can you imagine again writing it down, offering it to the fire that burns in a very controlled way in the center of our circle on this Thursday? And then for Mary Oliver, if that feels complete, to then shift a bit into this. For Mary Oliver, she would go down to the sea. She lived, it was written in 2010, I think she was still in Provincetown in New England, to go down to the sea, which held me until I grew easy. Where do you go? Whether it's literally, where do you go? Or where can you go in your mind's eye? Is there a favorite place? A porch that you spent time on perhaps as a kid? A swimming hole? A forest? A beach? A river? A garden? A bedroom? Is there a place that comes to mind when you imagine your body there, you grow easy? And maybe a number of places that come to mind, and just to pick one, but know that there are a number of them that can be tucked away in the toolbox, in the basket of delights for another time. But to allow, and to allow yourself to drop into this place, a place from when you were young, a place from last year, a place perhaps you don't know, but you can imagine that when you're there, the body grows easy. And to open the sense doors, what does it smell like? What season is it? What is the light? The quality of the light, What are you resting your body upon? The rock or sand, cushions? Are there any other beings there with you? Humans or those with four legs or any other ally of this world or of the spirit world that you would bring in to join with you in this place that can hold you and the body can grow easy? And to let yourself linger there, to remember, to imprint upon the memory what it feels like when the body grows easy. The cant of the shoulders, the feeling in the belly, the feeling around the eyes, in the jaw, in the back. And if you're having a hard time, just imagine it. You can't actually feel it. What would you imagine your body, to feel like when she's at ease, the body in repose? I went down in the afternoon to the sea, which held me. until I grew easy about tomorrow, who knows anything, except that it will be time again for the deepening and the quieting of the spirit. Is there a hint, to borrow from my friend Dana, a hint of a deepening and quieting of the spirit? Is there a hint of growing easy in the body? And if so, what is that hint like? If it's more than a hint, what is it like? What is it like to imagine being easy in the body and allowing for an ever deepening and quieting of the spirit? And again, asking us to linger here to have an embodied sense, inviting in, even if for just imagining, an embodied sense of when the body is easy, feels easy, and that there is a deepening and quieting of the spirit. Is there a particular posture that might arise from that place? How might it be to move in the world from that place with a deepened and quieted spirit? What might be different? What might be possible? And can we collectively hold the image? What if we all the beings on this beautiful and troubled planet moved from a place the body felt easy, and all beings everywhere had a quality, an embodied sense of a deepening and quieting spirit? So thank you for coming with me on that journey, and thank you for your kind attention. And I'd love to open it up to hear your thoughts, comments. Also, if anyone has any practice questions, that's more than welcome. If you feel reluctant to speak.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.